Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. We are recording this right or the day after the a couple earthquakes hit Turkey. So we wanted to say that we're just thinking about the folks out there while we're recording this. And it just sounds so awful with so much destruction and death and carnage out there. It's just very sad. And I think we're all thinking about the people of Turkey and hoping that they're okay. And as bad as it is, I hope it doesn't get any worse. Like those earthquake afterwakes and afterquakes sound so bad, Rochelle. Like everything, it just sounds so awful.
It really does. And, you know, our hearts go out to the people of Turkey and all those other surrounding communities. Syria was also affected by this, you know, and if I understood correctly what I read yesterday afternoon, this is one of the largest Richter scale earthquakes in a long time. And so that means they'll probably be having aftershocks, and then the buildings that have destabilized will probably become more unstable. And hopefully they can find as many people as possible. And we just pray and hope the best for all those people in the region and know that you're in our thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we are going to talk a bit about reaching across the aisles, and especially around mentoring and education, which is, I think, a very good topic. So I was happy that that this one came up, Rochelle. Mentoring is something I've been trying to focus more on it over the last year or two. And while I think I'm like decent at mentoring, like I think there's still like, I think mentors can always be better mentors, right? Like trying to just be better at it. And it's, I think it's one of those skills or one of those muscles that we don't often flex. Like if it goes unused, I think it can go away. And it's sort of a skill set that I think has to be practiced a lot, but also can be like very helpful, because I think we talk a lot on here about trying to raise the bar for everybody involved. And I think mentoring goes into a lot of that. Like if you can help people either technically with their jobs or even in, you don't just have to mentor people in jobs, like mentoring can be done anywhere. And it's sort of a cool, really cool thing. And I like personally, like having good mentors a lot of times keeps me at a job, right? Because we always want to be around people that can teach us things. And that's one of the reasons I like doing this podcast, big surprise, is I always learn something new from you, Rochelle. So I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always been my purpose in life is to reach across the aisle. And as you said, regardless to whether you're in the workplace, social, professional, personal, you know, to be there as a, you know, a lightning post in the middle of wilderness. But, you know, I will say what I've always admired about you, Drew, and, you know, I'm one of your biggest fans, is, you know, like you always reach across the aisles unintentionally, you know, so it's never surprising to get an email from you with a topic that we're going to discuss. I remember the first time you brought Go to the law school. That was pretty interesting. And I mean, you got a good audience and you always bring an expert to back you up, which you really don't need, but it's really, really good thing to have. And for people who do not have that experience of having someone in your workplace or your personal life, or whatever, who shows up, you know, and tries to make sure you're current, make sure you know the latest and greatest is coming along. You know, mm-hmm. You and Dan and several others, Dan Cantrell, have done amazing things reaching across the aisle. But, you know, one of the things I will take with me to my death was creating text and collaboration. Mm-hmm. It was my attempt to reach across the aisle. I've said this many times, you know, so when Dan Cantrell left the law school, he left a void, and I couldn't fill it all by myself. You know, I got the title of chief security officer, you know, chief technical officer, and all these things. And while they were all sound very nice under the cover of a senior manager, I couldn't have done all these things by myself. You know, I had not been a programmer in a long time. Web is still a foreign word to me, talking about web design. What? You know, like, you know, C++ and, you know, all these little scripts people write. You know, I didn't have those skills any longer. So creating Texan Collab was a way to bring people from different backgrounds, different areas of expertise together, so that when you encountered those wicked problems, you had a resource to go to, you know. Mm-hmm. And we don't use Texan Collab that way anymore, but it really is a good resource to put a problem in that space and ask people for their help or advice. And the people who don't necessarily participate fully still learn from the conversations that they hear. So why do you think in your career it has been advantageous for you to reach across the aisle to ask, you know, people for information or to give people information? Why has that been important to you?
So I think there's a couple of reasons. I think there's sort of the lofty reason of like, things are always better when more people know about it. So thinking specifically about Go, like Go, the programming language, which is what we're talking about. That's something that I had started working with and was finding it like very useful. And the reason that I presented it at our Texan Collab, like on one hand, it was like, hey, it'd be cool if other people could see this, like as an altruistic thing. Like, I think that's great. But on the other hand of that, the more selfish reason was like, if I like it and think it's important, I think it would also be cool if other people found out about it and thought it was important. And specifically with Go, that's how I like learned a lot of stuff. Like, I'm not sitting down writing Go code with the knowledge that like what I'm doing is the best, right? Like, I do as good as I can. I think it works for the most part. But when you have more people using something like that, you can learn from them. So like, if I'm successful in convincing someone else that Go is a good language, then they're going to get it and they're going to run with it. And I'm going to learn something from them. And honestly, like, I don't know that I could have learned Go by myself. Like, when I learned it with a coworker named George, who was, I would say he was like way ahead of me when we started. We're probably like more level now. But having him there as like my Go mentor was super helpful. Like, I knew, like, he had already sort of gone through the basic stuff that I needed to learn. So when I would get frustrated, I had this other person to talk to and sort of work through things. And sometimes we agreed on things, sometimes we didn't. But at the same time, I got that new perspective peppered in with my like vanilla experience of just reading the docs. And at least for me, like, reading the documentation is never quite enough. Like, I got to have a project to actually figure out how things work. Like, the words just don't seep into my brain until I actually do it. So I think that's sort of my answer is, like, on one hand, it's good to share knowledge because we raise that bar up. And, you know, we're also not saying that people have to use it, right? Like, it's a conversation. And just because I think it's useful doesn't mean that it's going to be useful for every single person that I share it with. My hope is that maybe it'll be useful for 1 out of 10 people, 1 out of 5, 1 out of 20, you know, some like small fraction of people that can get it, sort of get the point, and then run with it themselves. And my selfish side says, that's great, because there is another person that can help me out when I get stuck. And nobody wants to be stuck.
I think that, you know, for me, defining reaching across the aisle is in my instance, you know, it's a professional way of having a conversation that says, I need help, without actually going and saying, hey, I need help. Because when we formed Texan Collaboration, we did not have a specific problem or project in mind. It was just, here's this group of people that are all very smart, all very technical, all very personable and affable. Let's create this group. And, you know, we have hit and misses, right? When a whole bunch of people come, or just 1 or 2 people come, when we have our monthly meeting. But in essence, it's just a way to, one, stay in touch. We're in this new hybrid workplace, right? So, you know, people who you don't specifically work with every day, i.e. you're not going into the office as much, you know, you're not engaging with those casual conversations. So if somebody's over here working on security and you're working on data, you know, it's not always that you have an ongoing conversation unless there's a problem or a project arise, right? Mm-hmm. But with that kind of collaboration, when the problem arises, you're comfortable talking to the people there because you've gotten to know them. You spent time, in many cases, you shared a meal, you worked on a project, you know, something, but, you know, so you create this comfort zone of people who can be there for you. And so when you're thinking about this, taking it out of the workplace, so let's just say personally, you know, mental health has been such an issue over the last few years. And I think COVID has reinforced it so much. You have so many people who are, you know, struggling with mental health issues, thinking of suicide, all these things. Think about it, if you had built this organic group of people who could come together as a resource for you, whether it's a problem or a project. And again, I'm not talking professional, mm-hmm. I'm talking personal, right? So later on today, I'm going to talk to Drew and Dan about this project I have. And I have the comfort to talk to Drew and Dan about that because I know Drew and Dan. Well, someone might say, well, why don't you add some more people? I could. But first, I want to get to the people who know what I'm talking about. I have a good sense of what I'm talking about and can add value. And then it may grow to others. So I'm trying to give you a map or a blueprint on how to create your own text and collab or whatever you call it, but create your own little group that serves as a resource. The one you feel comfortable asking for help or describing a problem or discussing an issue that's, you know, a fancy. Maybe you saw the movie Plane or Megan, God forbid, you saw either one of those. But if you did see them,
both of them the same weekend,
you might want to talk to your friends about them and, you know, share, hey, I went to see this. Did you guys see this? You know, get fit. But it's a way to, one, be comfortable with someone and yet still have a resource that's there. And it's bi-directional, right? So it's not just you always asking for help. You know, the other person could be asking for help. So it's help. So it's a kind of engagement of support, you know. In a lot of ways, we call that mentorship or advocacy. I just call that humanity, being human, right? So the Texan Collab is a beautiful space, right? It's beautiful people, beautiful everything. But it's really a blueprint for people to think about how they create communities for themselves. And think about this. So what's different about Texan Collab as opposed to an offshoot meeting, right? So let's just say you called up the guy, George, you're like, hey, George, I'm having this problem, da, 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 da. You know, and George engaged with you. You engage with George. You work through the problem. But then you may disengage with George and you don't see George again. But if you have this collaboration, George is always there, whether you're talking about Go or talking about scripting or talking about honeypots, whatever you're talking about. My newest one is NFV. Who knew?
I don't know what that one is.
Oh my God, Drew, I read about it the other day and I was like, oh my God. So it's network function virtualization. That's what NFV stands for. And it's kind of like expanding the network. So let's just say you have a hotspot and you're roaming around and you might encounter another hotspot or another, you can join. Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
But my point Googling is, as you say, that's very cool. And yet another thing I never heard of.
Right. But, you know, all of these things that we could talk about that may not be relevant now, may not be relevant ever, but at least you have a safe space to talk to someone about it. So I suggest you reach across the aisle and create your own little community of people that are there for you and for them. You know, it's a good space.
Yeah, I would just add to that, like, this is something that I've been trying to practice over the last few years, especially because we're not around each other as much anymore. Is sort of like, I mean, I almost want to call it like priming the pump. Like, have you ever, like, you might be in a chat with some people or a, you know, a team or a Slack or whatever. And like, there are a lot of times where I find somebody saying like something like very interesting and something that I would like, maybe I don't necessarily want to know more about what they're talking about at the moment, but you can sort of tell that like you might click with this person and that you could learn something from them or vice versa. So what I've been trying to do is like, when that happens, like you can always just send the person a message, even if you don't have like a suggestion for them or need any help. Like, it's always cool to say like, hey, that joke you made was really funny. Or like, I really appreciated when you said this other thing. And it sort of greases the wheels between people so that, you know, once you do that, the next time you want to reach out to this person, it's not quite as maybe as form, I don't know if formal is the right word, but out of the
structured,
blue.
not as structured.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so it's sort of nice to just sort of reach out to people and say like, hey, this was funny, and or not, doesn't necessarily have to be funny. It can be whatever. It could be, hey, I heard you like movies. What do you think about this? Or, hey, I heard you like music. What do you think about this? And then you build up that relationship, and it's already there when you need it for, something bigger, like mentoring or processes or whatever. Like, just sort of making those little human connections, I think is really good. But it also takes practice, because who wants to just, send a message to some random person that doesn't even, like, they may not even know who you are.
I will say though, what this, so getting to know you, and this is one of those things I almost call it like workplace dating, right? So I was watching something the other day, and it was boring, so I hit the guy button, and first thing I saw was Omen, and then it said a few minutes later, half hour Damien Omen. I had never heard of that one was coming on. And you know where my mind went. It was nothing else in the world but Drew. I should send Drew a text. These terrible movies are on TV. But my mind also
Oh,
said he's
yeah.
probably watching them himself or already watched them. So I don't need to send Drew this. But
I
I
have
think
seen all
that,
the Omen movies. They're very good.
but I what I'm saying is that when you create a community like this, you find you have things in common. I have nothing movie in common with Drew. The only thing I have in common with Drew is that I like movies. None of the movies Drew likes. But I have something I know about Drew, or if I hear something or I think about something, I might send Drew a text or something. That you create this community that you build on, right? You start very small and you gradually build where, all of you heard me say this a million times. I'm in love with Drew. No disrespect, Mrs. Drew. It's a workplace love. But that there's this wonderful human being that's a part of my life, and it's a part of my life for hopefully the rest of my life,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
So think about that when you re think about reaching across the aisle and creating this. And it does not have to be, as Drew said, it does not have to be structured. It could be very informal. Hey, I saw this new restaurant in Garner or in Raleigh or in Fayetteville. Hey, you guys should go check it out. It stirs the pot, right? It keeps everything from settling to the bottom. You keep it active, and as much as you can keep it active and as functionally as you can, it's good for you too. It's good for your soul. It's good for your healing because one, you're giving and getting, right? So nobody's taking advantage of anybody else. You're engaging on things that you have in common or that you may have interest in. So it's growing this thing, so it's better for you and it's better for the person to have people in your lives who are good stalwarts and will be there for you through thick and thin. So, Drew, you are mine. Yay, my Drew.
Well, right back at you, Rochelle, because I still think that I learned a lot more from you than you learned from me, but I will accept it.
Yeah, Drew, I mean, there's nothing you can do except but that you're brilliant. That's all that there is. You just need to put it on your wall. Drew is brilliant. Just put it right over your door so when you go in, you don't have any questions about it. You are simply brilliant.
I keep telling myself that one day it'll stick.
Well, I hope it sticks soon. Think of all the problems you solve for others and how fast you solve them. That's indication of brilliance, Drew. But I still want to go back and ask you. So, I know you said you've been working at mentoring, but my first question is, what's the difference between a mentor and an advocate?
That's a great question. I don't know that. I mean, I think they can be the same.
They
Like,
are not.
so when I think of mentoring, I think of, and again, sort of like helping somebody with their skill set, moving them along. When I think of advocating, I mean, I guess that's maybe the next step as far as mentoring goes. Like, in addition to, and this is not an original Drew idea, I think I've stolen this idea completely from you based off of previous conversations, Rochelle, and I will use your words. I will say, putting skin in the game for advocacy. Okay, I've mentored this person. I think they can do like a pretty good job at it. Now it's time to, instead of just throw them to the world, like help them out in the world and like convince other people, help convince other people of their value in addition to like yourself. Like, just because you know a person is good doesn't mean that everybody knows they're good. And in fact, I mean, I think just the way people are, it's a lot of people are very, not trusting and don't want to stick their necks out. if they can get cut off. So that's sort of what it, is that what you're thinking, Rochelle? Like, I don't mean to put words in your mouth by any means, but that's sort of, that's the thought process I come up with when thinking through this.
I mean, I think you're almost spot on, right? So think about it. I'll give you two analogies, right? So mentoring is telling somebody there's a dance. Mm-hmm. Advocacy is asking them to dance, right? Hmm. Or I come to you and say, Drew, I'm having problems working with C++. I ran into a piece of code and I can't get that out. I can't get the error out of my code. Mm-hmm. And so you'll sit there and work with me. Well, Rochelle, you should have went about it this way. This is how it works. You know, kind of advising someone, helping them navigate a problem. As an advocate, you're helping them get to the next place, right? So just what you said. So, you know, I'm going to help you solve your problem with C++, but I'm also going to recommend that you apply for this job. You can use my name as a reference, or you can, I'll put in a call to someone. Advocacy is really being committed to the success of that person that you're working with or that you're involved with. Whereas mentoring, you know, kind of spot on, right? So sometimes you might have a reason to be with your mentee and sometimes you don't. Advocacy, you're constantly advocating, even when you're no longer in that same space together, you're advocating for person. But it's always the very beginning, nurturing, helping someone get through something. And then the other side is helping them fulfill whatever that is that they want to get to.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. One thing I'm curious about your opinions on is, and this is something I've noticed here and there in mentoring, not everywhere, but it's something I'm trying to work through better, is a lot of times when we start mentoring someone, we expect them to be at one base level and they end up being on a lower base level, right? Which is totally fine. And I'm not really sure what the question is, but I guess it's more of a, it's hard to tell what people's baselines are, and there is no incorrect baseline. And that's been sort of hard for me to get used to as well. It's like, okay, we want to learn, let's say, we'll use Go as an example again. Someone wants to use Go, and we say, oh, this is great. I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to get you up there. And then the first question is, well, how do I edit a file? And it's like, okay, well, we need to step this baseline down and we need to go over some basics. And once you get through that, there may be even another baseline that that gets lowered. But you sort of have to work through that to get the person to where they need to be. And like, I think that's fine. It's just, I don't know, figuring out the baseline, I think a lot of times can be tough and discouraging for people when there's not an agreed upon baseline, I think.
Yeah, I think that in that regard, you know, it's like I tell people all the time, you know, the tabula rasa, right? There is no such thing as an empty vest. If you hire someone that came into your organization and they never saw a computer in their lives, you cannot assume that they don't know anything about computing. You can assume they're new to this organization. You can assume they may be new to this position. They may be new to this technology, but they're not an empty sieve, right? Their mm-hmm. information is not seeping out. You're putting it in. They're taking it out. It's a constant marriage of that. I think that in the concept of reaching across the aisle, like there are other things that you have to factor in, and we don't talk about this, and this is really not something I feel particularly comfortable talking about, but like knowing the personality type, right? So you might be a type A and the person is a type B, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a type A person. If I send you a text, you need to respond in the same day.
Oh, I'm not a type A person.
You can't respond next week. But if you have a mentor or a mentee who is not a type A, you know, type double A or type B or whatever, and that person is, you know, relaxed, they're in the younger people language, they're chilled. I thought that meant food was cool, but that means that they're okay. But mm-hmm. but that they're a chill person and you're not. So those are the kinds of things where you talk about base level. Those are the things, it's almost like dating. And I hate to say that, but it really is like dating, right? So you have to find someone that you're in sync with. So let's just say, you know, new person came into your organization and they like scary movies. And so you're going to shepherd them along this scary movie line, right? So here are the great ones. Don't go see this one, you know, record this one, get a DVD or Blu-ray of this. You know, you're going to shepherd them along the process. But you may find, you know, after you started this path, that the person only basically likes little light scary movies. They don't like that deep down horror, you know, Texas Chainsaw movie. They're not going to watch that, right? So where you thought you had something in common with, you find that you have less. And so the change is a tide change. So I think that may be where you're going with those baselines. But the key, though, is can you work through those differences, right? So, you know, you are hardcore horror movie and that person is a lightweight horror movie. Can there be commonality between those two? And if so, you with this extensive movie knowledge and the person with lesser knowledge, can you coexist and then find common ground that grows the relationship, right? So if every time you talk to the person and he said, well, I saw the Lone Ranger and that was scary to me. And you're thinking, what? You know, like, this is not even on par with scary, right? And so where do you find a common ground? And that's what you have to do is find common ground and to be good with the person being different, right? So if the person is, you know, hardcore horror, they like every kind of horror, it doesn't make any difference. And you only like this kind, you have something in common to begin with, the horror. Now, the levels of horror is something else, but can you find common ground and grow that? And, and for the audience, you know, I'm picking on Drew about this horror thing because Drew is a horror person. He likes horror movies. I think Drew likes any kind of movies, but that's his in his top five, you know. So, but the point just is finding common ground that you can sustain the relationship, whether you're a mentee, an advocate, whatever you are, that you can sustain it. And that's meaning finding common ground to grow that common ground. So, you know, hey, Rochelle, I know you don't like scary movies, but you really should do this lightweight, not a lot of horror in it. You know, you should watch this. Developing that relationship. And so, you know, I'll watch, oh, Drew, that was terrible. I watched it. I could get through it, but it was terrible. But I really did learn something or I got something out of it. So, you know, you're growing it, right? So you might not have hit the mark, but you're growing it. And so you have to have some way where you can navigate your relationship with the person in a way that's beneficial to both. It cannot be a one-sided relationship where you're doing all the mentoring and the person is not giving any feedback. So you spent hours talking to them about something and they haven't said a single word. That's unsuccessful. So you could, you know, prune it, go and say, hey, I sent you all this information. Did you get anything out of it or you want to talk about it? And the person can say yes or no. If the person, if every time you go back to your mentor or mentee, it's not fulfilling, that's not the right mentor or mentee for you. And you have to be able to discern that for yourself, because if you're feeling drained or feeling like you just exhausted every time you have an engagement with your mentor or advocate, that's not the right person for you. And so you find a gentle way to break up. You know, you don't send a Dear Jane letter, hey, you know, this is just not working for me, but more like, you know, I think, you know, we should focus on these things where it allows the relationship to dissipate on its own, right? Because you have less and less things in common. So you spend less and less time together. But at the same time, you're still always mentoring. So Drew, my next question is like, so what is there a certain number of mentors you should have or mentees you have? So is are there numbers? Is there better to have a whole bunch of mentors or advocates or to have just one? You know, how do you see that?
You know, I think it should be a small number because I think it should be one or more would be my initial thought, but probably no more than five. I feel like five at a time is a bit much. Like one, two, three, four, or even five seems all right. But I mean, I think the other thing is like to be a mentor, you also need to be constantly learning yourself. So you can't give all of your energy away, I guess. I mean, I guess you could, but it wouldn't go very far. Like you need to refill it.
I was just going to say, I don't think you can set a number. I think you have to define a relationship. So do you have a limited number of friends? Oh, I only got five friends because, you know, these are the only people I really like or people who really are fun. You have degrees of friends, right? You have, you know, some of us call our best friend, whoever that person is, usually supposed to be your significant other, but your best friend. And then you have, you know, people of your gender or people of your age or people, whatever, that are part. And then you have people that you have things in common with, you know, so you could have a lot. I think the point that you make about not expending all of your energy is very important because you have to, the airport thing, airplane thing, right? You have to put yourself in the seatbelt before you put your kids in. You have to make sure you replenish your energy. But that said, you know, if you find out that this person gives you just this one thing, that's all they're good for, And I don't mean that in a negative way, but the only thing they are good for is cooking. And so the only time you want to see or hang out with that person is when you're hungry or you think about, we want to make a new dish or something like that. You could still mentor and be a mentee to that person. You just have to find that this is all that I'm going to get from that because that's all I feel like this necessary. So then that allows you to have another mentor that might give you X and another one might give you Y and so forth and so on. You know, you figure out how it's beneficial always going bi-directionally, but also to find out that you're not killing yourself trying to mentor or have a mentee, wherever your role is, that you're not killing yourself to fulfill it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that it also makes me think of like, and this is not something I'd really thought about before you mentioned it, but like, how many mentors do you want to have as a person? And I think it sort of goes the same way like that with that. Like I've had mentors that I talk to every week or more than once a week. And like you, Rochelle, and I've also had mentors that like I may just talk to once a month or once every 2 months based on, you know, sort of the, I don't know if nugget is the right word, but based off of their skill set and the things that I would like to pick up from them. Like, and I think that's good to think about too, right? Like, if you're a listener and you think like, hey, I have no mentors, like that's probably bad. Like, is it true that you have no mentors, or are you not seeing your mentors as mentors? Are you seeing them as something else? So sort of having the correct mindset as to like, we're all here to learn stuff, right? Like, and we all have things, nobody here can learn this all on their own. Like we have to learn from other people. Like that's sort of the key.
Right. And I think it's very important that we understand, you know, this is a needs game. It's not, a hookup or something trivial or transient, but it's really, how does this person benefit your life? So I don't call myself a mentor. I advocate for a lot of people, you know, how can I help you? And in a lot of ways, it's not doing anything. It's encouraging that person. So I'm not writing a reference or writing a letter recommendation, whatever it is. I'm encouraging that person to push forward past where they are. Yeah. And so I don't know how many people I do this for, but it's a lot. And, when I got sick and I was really sick, the thing I missed most was that. It wasn't cooking, wasn't, you know, doing technical things. It was my interaction with people. I tell people this, I was in the hospital very, very sick. And other than my family, my one visitor, and I will tell you, it made all the difference in the world. And if you don't know already, you've heard me say this a gazillion times, it's Drew, you know, my one visitor that came to see me, because everybody was scared to come see me, right? I have this killer bacterial infection, you know, and, you know, people got to dress up to come see me. They can't touch me, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard on me. I'm sure it was hard on them. It's hard on you, Drew, right? To come in there, you know, drive all that way. Then you got to put on all these gadgets.
It wasn't that bad. It was pretty straightforward, but I can understand.
But you get my point, right? So, you know, that's asking a lot of you and it's asking a lot of me. But I think that the varying degrees of how many people you help should be up to you and how you feel about it. If you're not benefiting from it, don't do it. It's just that simple, because you will hurt somebody and hurt yourself. You know, if you are thinking, you know, these people are just constantly draining me of my energy, they want too much, da, 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 don't do that. That's not your thing. But that doesn't mean you can't be a mentee or have someone advocate for you. There's a very important part in all of this relationship on both sides is the ask. You know, will you mentor me? Can I be your mentor? Will you be my mentee? You know, it's asking questions, and maybe not so direct and straightforward as that, but to establish the boundaries of what this relationship is so that there's no ambiguity here. So, you know, I'm not hanging out with you because I want to, you know, come over to your house and eat your food. I'm not hanging out with you because I want to go to movies with you. I'm hanging out because it's beneficial to both of us for us to be together. And that as long as there's something to be gained from it, it's great. And at the end of the day, we have to think in ways about ourselves and others. And I go back one last time with this about the mental health piece. So I have suffered with mental health issues almost my entire life. I'm not going to go into a lot of gory details, but, you know, I have had to have somebody pull me back because I was dangling from the ledge. You know, I mean, like, my person, my advocate has never written a letter of recommendation, never given me a reference, never done anything other than be a listening ear. And that to me is more valuable than anything else, because if I'm telling you something and you think it's absolutely ridiculous, that I trust you, I feel good when you say, Rochelle, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, versus somebody I've never met or I don't have a good rapport saying that, it will be offensive and hurtful to me. But if you said that, I would think, well, he knows me. He cares about me. He's not going to let me go astray. So I appreciate his advice and his mentee. So in our case, we are mentors and mentees to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good stopping point. And I think we're about at time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have any questions, comments, anything really, email us at imminentteachnology@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. Thank you.